Hi, this is Megan Francis, and you're listening to the Kitchen Hour podcast. I'm here to keep you company while you get dinner on the table and help you set aside more time for family, food, and fun. Today on the Kitchen Hour, I'm talking with Tish Oxenrider, who is the founder of SimpleMom.net and the Simple Living Media Network of Blogs. Tish and I talked about having a simpler holiday, gift giving in a reasonable way, and giving back during the holiday season. Welcome, Tish.
Hey, Megan. It's good to be here.
I'm so excited because I just 5 minutes ago saw on Facebook, as I'm recording this, that you have announced that you've got a new book coming out, and I really would love for you to talk about it because it ties in so well with what we're going to talk about today.
Sure. Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah, it feels really good to finally be able to spill the beans because I've known for a while, but you know how it goes with book writing. but yeah, it's a book called Intention. And what it is, well, first of all, it's completely different than my first book, which I'm thrilled about because it's not a how-to book. It's much more storytelling. My family story, mostly with a few other families sprinkled in, but basically it asks the question, can you live in this fast-paced culture, but in a slow-paced rhythm? And so it takes from our experience living overseas where everything was so slow paced that as Americans at first, it would drive us crazy. And like 3+ years later, we grew to like actually prefer that pace of life. And then we returned to the US and everything is so, so, so fast that we just felt like we couldn't keep up. But eventually we found ourselves like, oh, we're back to our American way of life and we don't like it, you know? And so it's kind of trying to reclaim the way we lived overseas, but here in America. And it kind of asks the question, is it even possible? So I really like it. It's fun. No book is easy to write, but it's easy to write in that it's a topic I'm genuinely interested in for my own family.
And it's so one that you're living actively right now, which I think.
Exactly. It's an evolution. I'm not done writing it. So in many ways, I don't even know the ending,
right?
You know, the ending is supposed to be what's the answer. And I don't know. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of an experiment. Yeah.
That's kind of refreshing because sometimes you read, you know, those memoirs or those kind of books that are all about this like change in life or whatever. And you kind of get the feeling they knew going in what they were going to say at the end.
Exactly. Well, and at first I thought it would be one of those like literal experiment books, like in for 1 year, we're going to try and do this kind of thing, which I like. I like reading those, but I also think that's a lot of pressure.
Right.
I mean, you know, come on, family, we're going to try to do this month. And really, it just might not be a good fit for us. My kids might be totally fighting it. And so it's much more of just kind of a general way of life and trying to figure out what it means even. And, you know, what is living slowly? I don't even know in some ways, but I'm learning more, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw this, but I blogged about not too long ago about our family planning on living in another country for a while.
And I love that.
And it's so funny because like I've always, you know, lived in the United States and I think we have a fairly relaxed life, but I keep reading. One of the things I keep reading, and we're looking at Ecuador. And one of the things I keep reading is, oh, the pace of life is so slow. And it's really hard for me to even grasp what that means or like what that would look like. So I would love for you to talk about like specifically a way that something is different here than it was there.
Well, in general, what we would say when we lived overseas in Turkey, by the way, is that if we got one thing done, then we had a successful day. So a to-do list became like a to-do thing. Like you don't even make it. Yeah. A sticky note with one thing on it. And so, you know, it's really lowering your expectations on what it means to have a good day, or not even lowering your expectations, changing your expectations. We're so obsessed here with getting things done. I think as busy working moms, you and I, we love to cross things off our to-do list and we love to just feel productive because then we feel like we're making good use of our time. But really, what does it mean to make good use of our time? Are we saving time to do what? You know, I love the idea of saving time so that I can finally, you know, reupholster my ottoman that's been waiting for about years or something. But I don't do that. I move on to the next thing on my to-do list and then I wake up and I start all over
because the ottoman never seems important enough or something, right?
Exactly. There's always something else to do. And so it's like there's that old fable, I think it's a Mexican fable, about like the fisherman. I don't know if you know what I mean, like where the guy, he's a small old man fisher, you know, he works for himself, I guess. He's just a fisherman, and a big time corporation comes up and says, you know, we could teach you how to fish really well and you can make all kinds of money. And the guy basically says, oh, so that I can do what? And he said, well, you can earn lots of money. And he said, for what? Okay, earn money for what? Well, then you can retire and do whatever you want. And he said, well, I'm doing that now,
right,
you know?
Right.
And so it's that kind of idea, like sort of living the way you hope to live in the future, but now.
Yeah. And, you know, it does start to feel kind of like a race to nowhere, you know, like I'm hurrying up so I can have more money so that I can have more, you know, vacations or a bigger house or whatever. But if you just need a vacation from your life,
because exactly. And, you know, and you guys know, because I know your husband works with you and at home a lot, right? He works at home. Right. So we're the same way. And to some degree, we could be doing more than we do. Mm-hmm. Me and my husband, Kyle, we could be putting in more hours. We could be launching more things. We could be, you know, doing even more than we do now, but to what end, you know, we decided. It's like, is our whole existence about working? Well, no, of course not. So it's also about like knowing what to say no to, so you can say yes to the really good things, you know, which includes for us, which includes travel and just quality family life. And, you know, it, there's a sacrifice to it. I mean, even though we make our full-time income online, you know, we make certain sacrifices to make that happen.
Right.
So, yeah.
And, you know, I think for someone, I know that you're an idea person just like me. And I know we've talked before about like domain hoarding and stuff like that. So it's kind of a tough balance because I am very much like a person who wants to be doing things, but there can be that pressure to be doing the things that I really want to do. I never get to because I have to do all this other stuff to kind of, you know, make the money to allow me to do the thing I really want to do. And that's something that I've definitely, especially with an entrepreneurial, you know, spirit that I have, it's very hard not to get sucked into all this kind of side stuff that I don't even necessarily want to do and then never have time for the stuff that I want to do.
Right. Well, and too, I feel like sometimes those things I want to do are not, it's not so much a no, it's just more of a not yet.
Right.
You know, I mean, I know your daughter is getting older, your youngest one, but I still have a 2-year-old.
Right.
And so I know like in 3 years when all my kids are in school, life will probably be different for me and I can pursue more things.
Well, and Claire is 3.5. So it's like, I'm not there yet. She's still with me a lot of the time, but kind of when you're when you have a 2-year-old, it's like, you're still in it. You know, you're like really in it. And right now with Claire, it's like, I can just kind of see, you know, like I can just see past on the horizon a little bit where she's going to be much more independent and, you know, she's already getting that way, but she'll be in school and, like you said, it'll change a lot and time will, you know, seem to open up and, and you don't have to do everything right away. And some of those domains I've been sitting on for years and that's okay. Like I don't have to act on them all right now.
Well, and my thing too is as a mom, like I don't necessarily, I have to remind myself that I haven't mastered this, but I don't want to necessarily wish away the younger years either. Mm-hmm. You know, like Finn is our youngest and he's our, I think we think he's our last. Mm-hmm. And
so,
we think, quote. So we want to enjoy these last few things. You know, I love him being 2. I don't want him to wish he was 5 yet.
Totally. So, I understand that feeling completely. Although sometimes at the end of the day, that is a little hard to do when you have a 2-year-old.
I totally know.
It's like you want them to be little forever, but like just for 5 minutes, you wish they were a little older.
or a little more independent or a little more like potty trained or something.
Somebody said once to me that they, you know, they want their kids to fall asleep and then they would like look at their kids and kind of wish they would like wake up again. Like, you know what I mean? Like you always want something other than what's going on, especially when it's that stressful time.
It's so funny. I can't say I've ever wanted my kids to wake up, but I like to look at them because they look awfully cute when they're asleep.
So true,
you know, that's like, oh, look how sweet they are.
So your book, okay. So Intention is kind of like the shorthand title, but I know it's got kind of a longish subtitle and I'd love you to share that so we can get a better
actually,
if you remember what it is.
Well, I have to look at it every time. It's really sad because it's one of those longer ones. And so it's like, what did I say? I know the beginning is again? Notes on the Quest to Save Her Life, Enjoy the Kids, and Say No to Living Fast.
Okay, I love that.
That's what it is. So, yeah.
I love that.
We wanted that.
Oh, I was going to say, so you've been, how long have you been back in the United States?
Well, honestly, it's almost 2 years now, so it's been a while.
And have you found that now you've kind of slipped totally back into sort of the American way of thinking and, you know, go, 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 or what's that?
Yeah, it's kind of weird for me because yes, in a sense, I mean, Kyle and I also lived overseas as singles. That's where we met. So we've had experience living overseas before just our time in Turkey. We both lived in Kosovo for a while. And so, Yes, it's really easy to get just fall back into your rhythm of your home culture. But one thing that's helpful for us to remember is that our kids, being as young as they are, they still have lived a good chunk of their life overseas. I mean, like proportionately, you know, our middle son was born there in Turkey. And then Tate was only 2 when we moved there. And so in many ways, our home culture, me and Kyle's home culture, is not necessarily as normal to our kids as it is to us. Mm-hmm. And so it's helpful to remember that it's becoming more and more normal. You know, kids adapt really easily. Right. So it's becoming pretty normal. But, you know, at first when we would come back, she thought we were Turkish. And so she would ask, are we the only Turks living in America? And be like, well, we're not really Turkish. but that to her was her perspective, because right. that's where she lived most of her life. And so as a family, you know, we still trip up a little bit, because it's just surprising to me how formative those years are. And so because our kids had those early years overseas in a slower culture, that to them is not that unusual. But gosh, it happens quickly. You know, our kids are in school, and so they hear what other kids talk about and want. And, you know, suddenly it's really important to have those things. Or, you know, it's easy to get sucked back into this lifestyle. Yeah. And so that's kind of why the book is called Intention, because it means you really have to be proactive about living slower. You can't just hope it happens.
And so much of it too is, you know, one thing I've noticed, just because I had kids really young and we were very broke and, you know, just didn't have much material, you know, resources. And then as we got older and, you know, we just kind of crept into this more middle-class life, and our expectations went up. And I felt like suddenly, like when you don't have any money, or when you're just like living, when you're like 22, your expectations of what you're supposed to have are very different than when you're 32 yeah. and you're surrounded yeah. by 32-year-olds who are all in this kind of middle-class existence. So I found it very interesting to see how much other people's expectations mm-hmm. have impacted, even though I really thought it never would.
I know. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I think I'm kind of immune to that, or not so much immune to it, but, you know, we know pretty well who we are. We're pretty self-aware. We know what's important to us. And yet there's still these, I don't want to even call them temptations, because I'm not tempted by them per se, but I just start feeling weird, and I get tired of feeling weird sometimes.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. And, you know? And sometimes you make decisions and you think other people are probably like, why would they do that? And then you feel like you always have to have a defense or a reason, or like, you know, I'm going to write a blog post about that, so everybody in the world knows
exactly
why I do X, Y, and Z. It makes it convenient when you're a blogger.
Yeah. But well, and so for us, it's like, I also don't want to come across as judgy, because I don't mean it in a judgy sort of way. So like, for example, we live in a neighborhood that's not necessarily super high end or anything. And we did it really intentionally. That was on purpose, because we didn't want to spend a lot of money on where we lived, because we live in such a small town. It didn't matter to us. Right. And having been used to living in a big city, to us, a 15-minute drive is nothing, you know? So we would rather do that and have more money to travel. And we only have one car, and that's because that works for us. We both work from home, and we don't need more than one car most of the time. But that doesn't mean other people shouldn't have 2 cars, or they shouldn't live on that side of the town, or whatever. Right. You know, it's just what works for us.
Right. Yeah, totally. Yeah. So this will be airing close to the holidays. And of course, this is a time when the expectations and the fast-paced culture and all that can totally turn into a big miasma.
Yes. So I
wonder if you, you know, especially now that you've been back for 2 Christmases, will this be your third? Right.
Yes.
Okay.
That's right.
So I would love to hear if there is a way that you've seen this kind of creeping into your life, you know, around the holidays, and if so, or if not, like kind of how you've battled back against the craziness.
Well, you know, in many ways I really prefer to be here, because here, meaning the States, because it is a fun, I enjoy to some degree the whole Christmas shopping, you know, with the music and the decor. You know, it's not like I think that stuff is wrong and evil. And I remember crying on Christmas Eve in Turkey because I was grocery shopping, and to everyone around us, it was totally a normal day, you know, and I was just in the mood to hear like jingle bells and, you know, and for people to be all saying Merry Christmas. And so that, you know, I do like, but I find in general, some things that really help us, we don't watch a lot of TV, like normal TV. We do Netflix and Hulu. Mm-hmm. As a family, and just not having the commercials makes a world of difference for our kids. And they every now and then will watch quote regular TV either at a friend's house, or we'll plug in the, we'll, you know, change it to where they can watch it. And suddenly they see commercials and they start asking for stuff.
Isn't it amazing it's how like, quick it is?
It's an on-off switch. Yeah. It's hilarious to me. It's almost like 2 minutes ago you didn't know that thing existed, right, and now you can't live without it. And so, and it's, that's exactly what commercials are created for. And so just especially that time of year, just really curbing the commercial awareness or whatever you want to call it. And with that, kind of the main thing we do with our kids is limit them to 3 gifts. Mm-hmm. And we've done that from the beginning. Our kids know that they only get 3 gifts. And so, and that number is pretty arbitrary for us. It doesn't, there's nothing magical about 3. We just kind of thought that was a good number. Mm-hmm. And so we feel like our kids already kind of know they're only getting 3. So there's not this like expectation of this pile of gifts, right, under the tree Christmas morning, you know, they know. And Christmas Day, we really take a long time to open presents. And in between each one, we let the kids play with them for a while. And so we kind of drag out the magic of it, you know, because just the whole wrapping, moving on to the next one, wrapping, you know, with only 3, that would end really
fast.
Yeah,
you can't do that, right.
No, right. And then the other thing we do is, well, we sponsor a compassion, we sponsor 2 compassion kids, and we send extra money for Christmas gifts. And so we make a big point to do that. But we also talk a lot throughout the Christmas season about things like giving, mm-hmm, you know, in practical ways where we do an, I think it's called Operation Christmas Child or Shoebox something. Mm-hmm. I forget what it's called, but basically you send a shoebox to this one company and or company, whatever, nonprofit, and they send it out to different countries around the world where they're distributed to the kids. And so it's like little gift wrapped shoeboxes full of things inside that your kids picked out for another kid.
Oh, that's really cool.
It's really cool. I can send you a link to
it. Yeah, it's the show notes. So it's Operation Shoebox. Yeah. Is that what you said?
It's Operation Christmas Child, but it's there's some kind of subtitle, which is shoebox something. Okay. But basically, so it limits you to just the smaller things, right, which is helpful. And so it's not really expensive. But you can do things that are practical, like toothbrushes and toothpaste, but also like little stickers or, you know, things that kids like to give. And so that's always fun for our kids. They enjoy picking things out for a kid, usually their age and their gender. Mm-hmm. You know, that's fun for them. So, yeah, we do lots of little things like that to where we revel in the Christmas spirit, whatever you want to call it, but it's not all about them.
Right. So, you know, and I like that idea because I know for myself last year, I was thinking like, how am I, because we've always do some kind, you know, we'll do a Toys for Tots drive or something church related like that is kind of a charity thing around the Christmas holiday. Mm-hmm. But I often find that I feel like a disconnect from it. And I don't think the kids really, they just don't really connect with it as much as they would if something more personal, like they were picking it out. But then of course, last year I'm thinking like, how am I going to, you know, volunteer this year? We should all go volunteer at a soup kitchen or something. Well, I've got 5 kids and this is not, exactly, it's not going to happen now. I mean, maybe like when they're all able to actually hold a tray without dropping it or, you know, not be underfoot, that kind of thing.
You being there would actually,
I would be in the way and everybody would be like, what? Thanks a lot. Yeah. So sometimes I feel like I have these, I put way too high of expectations on myself for like what I can actually accomplish at this phase of my life. And, you know, it's nice to hear about something that anybody can do.
Right.
And I'm glad you brought up compassion because I was just remembering that when I was a kid in the 80s, one of the things that my mom did one year, and we had very little money, but I remember we sponsored a child, and I want to say it was through Compassion or if not, one of the similar organizations. And I still remember that little girl's face. Like I can see her photo in my head. That made such a huge impact on me. And we did that for, you know, years and years and would send.
Yeah.
And I think at Christmas you could send like a small, I don't really remember, but I think you could send like very small gift, like Jack's or, you know, something like that.
Right.
Yeah. And so, and that was just the kind of thing that I felt a real connection with.
That's cool.
Whereas putting money like in the Salvation Army bucket, it's nice, but I just never.
Right. It didn't, there was not a face.
I had no idea where that money was going. I didn't really care. I just wanted to drop it in the slot.
And I think one thing like compassion, they do so well is that they really build the relationship. They have their kids write their sponsors and then really encourage the sponsors to write them back. And so the letter writing has really put names and faces to things. And so we, you know, we're starting to get to know, we have a girl that's my daughter's age, and then we have a boy that's my middle son's age. And we'll probably add a third when he's old enough, you know, for my youngest. And so we're starting to get to know what they like and don't like. And it's kind of fun. And for Christmas, this compassion encourages sending cash. just because of shipping or whatever, it's easier, I guess. But what they do is they take the kids shopping and they buy things and then they take a picture and they send it to you and they write a thank you note and say, this is what we bought. And it's usually, I mean, it's so heartwarming because they encourage a max of $20. Right. So we're not talking a lot. And they'll encourage, I mean, it's although like,
that goes a long way.
And it goes so far, right. And you're just like, oh my gosh, you know, right. Food for several months, right, for their family. And so it's really cool for our kids to see that.
That is cool. And tell me a little bit about, with Compassion, is it sort of like you're sponsoring this child, but actually the money is kind of also being distributed throughout the community or to her family or his family, or how does that work with that organization?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not an official Compassion rep, sure. but I've been on a trip with them. Okay. And so I can see firsthand in the Philippines, and I know each country is a little bit different depending on the situation, mm-hmm. but the way it works in the Philippines and in most of the countries is they have one kid per family that's a Compassion child. Okay. So for example, one of our Compassion kids, her name is Denise in the Philippines, and she's the middle child of a family of three kids. And technically all three of them are very poor, obviously, because it's the whole family. Mm-hmm. But what Compassion has seen by is that by supporting one child, they're supporting the whole family.
Okay.
And so therefore they're able to, you know, spread the blessings to other families easier than by letting all three kids be in the program, I guess is the best way to put it.
That makes sense, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, but I do know in certain countries they do let siblings be both kids so that they can stay out of danger, depending on the situation. So I know like in certain slums of India, they have the kids so that they can, like Compassion All has programs where you go and kind of learn basic life skills and things like that. And so that way the kids aren't at home by themselves, which is dangerous.
Right,
so okay. It just depends on where it is. Yeah. It's pretty crazy.
Wow,
but
I never would have even thought of that, but yeah, that's
yeah. Weird. Yeah. So, it's, they do a great job and it's one of the most financially reputable organizations at all. Not just a child sponsorship thing. I was really impressed because on our trip, they encouraged us to just go through their files in all their offices.
That's and unusual.
Yeah, it's very unusual. They would say, like, please go through these files, and they'd open them up and show us. They showed all their spreadsheets. And, I mean, I don't even remember the percentage, but, like, way, like 90% or 86% or something goes directly to the kids. So it's a lot of money.
Okay, well, in the show notes, I'll definitely link to Compassion and the other organization
yes.
I spoke about. And yes. One thing, circling back to Christmas, that I wanted to remark about, that you said, you know, you love going shopping. And like kind of being in that Christmas mood, you know,
yeah.
And so do I. And I think sometimes like, I think one thing about the American culture, is we tend to kind of flop back and forth between these two extremes. And I don't mean me like we like me, cause I, this is one thing I think I don't do, but okay. So there's the people who are like out crazily shopping, you know, like buying, like just crazily consuming and really they start their shopping super early because all the decorations go up in September or whatever. And then you've got on the other side, the people who are just grouchy. I hate them all, you know,
yes.
I hate going to Target. I hate this and that. Uh-huh. I wish it was just all over. And I just feel like that's such an American thing to kind of like have those two opposite ends of the spectrum. Instead of happy meal. And it's like, you know, first world problems, right? Like
totally. Exactly.
It must really stink to live in a place where we have all this, you know, excess and
all these
options. But it does, I think, for a lot of people feel very overwhelming. And I think maybe it's the sense I get from people who are just really grumpy at Christmas is that they feel that way because they feel like they don't have any choices or something. They feel like it's so expected of them.
Yes. They have to do this. I would say it's that, and it's also they don't come in with a plan, not to say that they have to go in and know exactly what they're getting,
right.
But maybe they go in and just think, I'm Christmas shopping.
Right.
They go in and then feel overwhelmed and they get angry because of the overwhelm, which I get,
yeah,
you know?
Totally. Yes, I understand
but
that.
Like if something as simple as like a list and mm-hmm. I'm only getting this many things for this people. Honestly, what I do, I prefer online shopping.
Oh, me too.
On the whole.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I'll buy the bulk of my gifts online and then we'll go shopping at a store for like stocking stuffers mm-hmm. or just, you know, smaller things, not really to go, you know, I don't go to the mall and try to fight for
absolutely
the toy
not
of the year or something.
I do kind of the same thing. And we have a similar, we do three gifts for mom and dad. And then we do one, like kind of a bigger Santa gift. And often now that our bigger mm-hmm. kids are getting bigger, often that's a shared gift. Cause it's really mm-hmm. tricky shopping for teenagers. You know, when four gifts doesn't seem like a big deal for a 6-year-old.
I can't even imagine.
But when it's teenagers, everything they want is expensive.
So right. I was going to say, I can't even fathom. I mean, My daughter's already starting to get hard and she's not even eight. Yeah. So, I mean, goodness.
I mean, like right now, you know, my 6-year-old, I could buy him $4 or $5 toys and he'd be thrilled. But that's not quite the case. I mean, you know, the older kids, like they like books and they like fun t-shirts or whatever, but we always want to get them something special. And so I think online shopping is totally the way to go. And then I'll usually go downtown to our little, we have a cute little downtown in our city, and I'll do one like little excursion where I'll just get things that just look like fun. You know, like I don't even have any expectations. Sometimes I just go look around and don't buy anything. And then we'll usually go to a Target or a store like that for stocking stuffers. But then I feel like that way, since all the big stuff's out of the way, I don't stress. Like I'm just kind of walking and just enjoying the music. And I try not to pick a crazy time to go. Like I like to go during the day, which is one of the benefits of working from home, you know, like 3 o'clock on a Wednesday or something.
And I think too, I mean, it is fun to take your kids, but it's also a lot saner to not go with your kids. Yeah. And when we do go to a store as a family, I remind my kids before we go in that you may not tell me you want something. You can tell me you like something. And so my kids will be, I like that. I like that. I like that. You know, which is essentially what they're saying is I want that. Yeah. But somehow it tempers their, it's the same idea, but it tempers their spirit a little bit, I find.
Yeah.
To where they're acknowledging, I'm not going to get this.
Right, but exactly. It would be nice if I did, but it's probably not.
Right. And so it helps my ears too, for some reason. I mean, it's still frustrating sometimes when they talk about every single thing, but it's not quite the same as them saying, I'm going to be mad at you or I'm going to, I don't get this.
You know what we do with that? We have the list and it's magical. I'll just say, put it on the list. And so half the time by the time we get home, they've forgotten all about it. If it does make it onto the list, they still know they're not going to get everything on the list. So then usually, you know, they'll keep a birthday list and then they keep a Christmas list. And usually it's just in their head until like a couple months before.
I was going to say, an official list?
Well, it depends on the kids. Some kids take this very, very seriously. Like my son William's birthday is this week. And on his birthday list, he put down pistachios. And I was like, you want pistachios for your birthday? He's like, well, I just really like pistachios and I'm just really hoping I might get some. And I was like, well, you could have put that on the grocery list.
Yeah, right.
You don't have to ask for it for your birthday. But that's just how he is. He's very, you know, he's very kind of rules oriented. But usually they don't actually start writing stuff down until like a month, you know, a couple months before.
Right.
But it is funny to watch. Once in a while I'll walk past the list and you usually keep it in the kitchen or someplace like that's easy to see, and they'll have crossed something off. They've just decided that thing is no longer a priority. So it's kind of like I used to trick myself when I would shop. I used to shop really recreationally and I had to wean myself off of that just because I was boredom. I had like two little kids and I would just go walk around Target and I would just throw everything in my cart and then make myself do like 3 loops around. And then by the time I got to the end, I'd be like, I don't even remember what's at the bottom. So I guess I can put all that back. You know, it's like pulling it off the cart and putting it – or pulling it off the rack and putting it in the cart actually satisfied some weird consumer, you know, like urging me. And then I didn't even want to buy it. It was funny.
That's
so
really funny. I can see that. I can totally see that. And I think for me, when I go shopping, I think through – well, I mean, this has become a habit. It's not natural. Mm-hmm. But I think through, okay, where would I put this in the house? And if this comes in, what would go? Or, you know what I mean? Like I have to make room for it. And it almost like I start feeling the stress of like, I have no place to put this. I don't want that pressure.
Right.
Of, you know, having to deal with it. So it's like, I can admire it. It's pretty, but that doesn't mean I have to buy it.
Yeah, you know, totally. Because sometimes you know, one thing I think, again, those two crazy opposite sides of the spectrum is like, we get so to the point where we don't want clutter, we don't want stuff, we don't want to shop, we don't want to be consumerist, and then we don't even want the, like, we kind of dismiss the pleasure of just being out looking at things, you know?
Yes,
and just being out around people and looking at pretty things and smelling pretty candles and whatever. I mean, there is a benefit to me to that, the sensual thing, I guess.
I think that kind of comes back to what we were talking about at Christmas time. Right. That a lot more of it is just the mood, you know, it's the getting the coffee and walking around and seeing the sights, listening to the music, and that can be enough.
Right.
You know,
exactly. And especially when it's part of a ritual, that something maybe that you do every year, I feel like it just gets so much more like there's that music, you know, I don't listen to Bing Crosby any other time of the year. Mm-hmm.
Right, exactly.
Not even his nun. I'm not even sure the guy's got non-Christmas music. I'm sure he does.
Exactly.
Like, so Bing Crosby and Nat King Cole are Christmas, you know? So
yeah, exactly. I have friends, just old friends that I've had forever that They have this tradition where, I don't even remember when, but it's a particular time in December where the two of them, it's a date night where they go to the mall or go wherever shopping, and they just point out to each other gift ideas. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, I like this. Hey, like, they don't ever buy anything, but they just enjoy being together and kind of thinking of ideas for each other and just, you know, kind of gives them ideas on what to give each other for Christmas. And then they go home and then, you know, they often buy them online or they just, you know, don't even buy them at all, but they get a feel for what the person might enjoy for Christmas. And so they just, they get the feeling without having the big baggage of the bill and, you know.
That, and I like, you know, and that's a kind of another thing I was thinking about with this sort of aversion, you know, the extremes is like giving gifts is pleasurable. And so, mm-hmm. and that's something I'd like my kids to feel that, you know, the joy of giving. So I don't want to be a drag around Christmas, like, you know?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Like, oh, consumerism, you know, yeah, eat them all. Exactly. Because that might really be, even though we also try not to like drag our kids. Well, we don't even have a mall here. That's kind of one great thing about living in a small town. Yes. It really limits
the options. I agree. We don't have one either.
So it's like, kind of nice. When I take the kids, we'll usually split them all up. Each kid will get one other family member to shop for. And then we'll take them downtown and we split up into groups. We make it specifically so, you know, the people can, the kids can team up and shop together. And then we'll just kind of each duck into little shops. And at the end we go get a hot chocolate or something. It's really low key and it's not like that, but they like that too. So I try to preserve that and make that part of the right. holiday experience.
Gosh, I hadn't thought of that. When you have older kids and you have more kids than me. So you've got to put some limits on that somehow. Yes. Otherwise that's a lot of gifts.
Oh my gosh. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I also had to become okay with investing in higher ticket items for my kids without worrying that that was going to like spoil them or something. Like last year we got my son a Kindle and I was like, ugh, how can we get him something? You know, this piece of electronic, it's so expensive, but he uses it all the time. And I use my Kindle. I don't buy really books anymore. Physical books, because I just love having a Kindle and I love that it's no clutter and it's, I can just get whatever books I want. They're usually cheaper. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why I love my Kindle. And I thought, well, why would I, that would be a little hypocritical for me to love reading on a Kindle and not to like allow him to have that experience or not to think that he could handle it. And he's been fine with it.
I think that sounds great. Like I look forward to my kids being older where they get that just because there's not, a lot of things that doesn't mean it's not valuable or not, you know, I don't know what I mean. Like, right. My kids are still very concrete at that age, you know, to where they'd rather see a line of books on a bookshelf than one little tiny little gadget.
You're totally right. So, and it's different when they're little, they just want, you know, they count, like they'll count the numbers. And if one kid got another, you know, more gifts than they did, that's a problem. And like with the bigger kids, they don't really, they kind of know, like sometimes we don't even end up getting them the full four gifts because honestly, by the time we get to like gift number three, we've already blown the budget and anything number three and number four is just going to be something little anyway that they may not even want. They don't even really notice. It's just, I guess that's part of the process of becoming an adult, right? When your birthday goes from being this big, huge deal to being like, to being like an adult birthday where you're like kind of happier with what you get.
Honestly. And I'm even at the point for Christmas where I can't think of much of what I want. Like, you know, there's not a lot of gifts or things I really want anymore. And so I remember as a kid, my parents would say that, you know, what do you want for Christmas? I want a hug. And you're just like, what do you want? And, and I kind of get that now where it's like, there's really not anything I really want. Yeah. You know, you can get me something, but I'm fine without it too.
Absolutely. It's funny. So gifts are one thing at the holiday. But another thing I think that gets people really stressed out is kind of the expectations of being places. And do you live near your family, like your extended family?
We live near one side by a couple hours, and then the other side is all the way in Texas, and we're in Oregon. So
Has that helped then with the holiday, like kind of, or does it make it worse? Yeah.
Well, both, I would say. There's pluses and minuses. It definitely is a more sentimental time, so we miss family and we get more homesick. But last year was the first year we've had Christmas in our own home, just us, the whole day. And it was really nice. Yeah. Like Kyle and I looked at each other and was like, this was so relaxing. And we, you know, we could eat what we wanted and when we wanted. We didn't have to like rush out the door to go to some extended family thing, which I don't mind, you know, when you have little kids, sometimes that is kind of challenging. Like, okay, kids, stop playing with your toys. Right. We got to go, you know. And so it was really nice just to have it the way we would ideally have Christmas. And so Yeah, it helps, I would say, with the busyness, mm-hmm. but that doesn't mean we don't still miss it, you know?
Yeah, no, I understand that. And we've, mm-hmm. when we were the first couple on my in-law side to get married and have kids, and then like the second on my side. So mm-hmm. we've kind of set it up, you know, it took a little while of negotiating on my husband's side because he was still a kid. He was the oldest and the younger two mm-hmm. were still at home. So he mm-hmm. was one of the children. You know, still.
Oh, yeah.
So it was
right,
like,
right.
No, we're, you know, we still go to New York every Christmas. They would always go to Buffalo, which is where their in-law, where my in-laws are. And and then we went a couple of Christmases and I was like, you know, after a while, I just don't want to be in the car like a right. couple days before Christmas. And I don't really want to be in another town, another state on Christmas. Right. So we've kind of, over the years, we've changed it. So now we do Christmas with his parents, his mom and family, like mm. usually a week before Christmas. Then
yes.
Christmas, we just do it. It's just us. And that's then we nice. Spend New Year's with my family. And, you know,
oh, that's nice. It is,
and everyone's got their own stuff going on anyway. Like everybody has large families. So we have like 13 mm-hmm. kids in the family total. And oh, well. We don't want to really all have this. I mean, it'd be impossible for us all to get together on Christmas Day because we don't right. all live in the same place. But also then you get into the craziness of having to buy gifts for all your nieces and nephews. You don't have to, but everyone, you know, it's like harder to kind of negotiate that stuff.
It's so. Really tricky. I know. We have, we've been blessed, I think, by two sides of the family that are pretty logical and sane and, you know, they don't have unreasonable expectations mm-hmm. on us. And so, especially our generation, like our brothers and sisters, right. they've kind of said just along with us that they would rather have Christmas with their kids at their own yes. house. Like that's kind of a boundary for them. Is we want to have our own Christmas at home, and all our parents seem to understand that and respect that. So that kind of seems to be what we do on Christmas Day. You know, if yeah. we're in Austin, which is what my side is, we would do our own Christmases in the morning. You know, my brother and his kids and wife do their Christmas. My parents would do whatever they do. I don't know. You right. know, they go out to eat or something.
And, something people without children at home do.
Yeah, I don't know. It sounds nice in some ways. But and then we do our, and then probably like 2 o'clock or so we'd get together. And so that's kind of nice. I miss that too. Yeah. But, you know, it's also fun to have the whole day to ourselves, or we can go out on walks and right. go, you know.
Or just whatever. Stay in your pajamas all day. That's what we usually do.
Of course. Yeah, don't do a darn thing. yeah. Right. That's nice too.
I wanted to ask you about, this is the first year your kids are in school, right? Like ever?
Or well, my daughter did a half day kinder in Austin, okay. but it was like a 9:30 to noon situation. So it wasn't really, really school.
And
you
what
know?
Grade is she in now?
She's now in second, so okay. we're still in the early
you
stages.
You still are, but
yeah.
have you found that it makes the holiday a little different? I mean, one thing that I've definitely noticed that can add to that feeling of sort of, you know, stress or craziness is the school expectations, not only the performances and that kind of thing, mm-hmm. but like the teacher gifts. I mean, just feels like there's like yeah. an additional pile on there sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, for me, there is kind of the extra events, mm-hmm. you know, like we haven't even hit Christmas yet. And I got a thing in her folder yesterday. It was about like our Veterans Day event. I'm like, Veterans Day? Right. And then, yeah, we've had events since the school year started yeah. in September, just constantly. And it is kind of funny that it's just like, oh, well, I mean, it's not that, you know, I'm against Veterans Day or anything. Right. It's just one of these like, oh, one more thing to right. do. So, yeah, I think Christmas is going to be a bit, not a challenge for us, but a bit of a rearranging of our expectations mm-hmm. to some degree. And what I'm finding is that my daughter, it's kind of the same idea as watching commercials. My daughter suddenly has more ideas of what she would like or right. want, or, you know, one of the girls in her class went to a Justin Bieber concert and
interesting.
And so suddenly my daughter wants to go
wow,
where
second
before
grade.
She was right. Second grade. And of course we wouldn't go, but even if, I don't know, to me, it's like, you 2 months ago you wouldn't have even thought of that
right.
but now because someone else in the class went you want to go right. so that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think that can definitely it can definitely change the way your kid thinks that they want. I mean, and the thing is, well, I'm just kind of floored because when I was in second grade I was so not into pop music, but I know it's not the same world as it was then, but it would never even have occurred to me to want to go to a concert. Oh my goodness.
I know,
it's
I know
different now. And I think kids have more not only do kids have more maybe expectations along those lines, but kids have more access to stars in a way that we never really did. You know, there was
right.
no Twitter with
right.
like Bieber,
right.
Bieber going on it and stuff. So, exactly. But one thing I was going to say and a few weeks ago, and I have to say we're taping this quite a ways ahead of Christmas. So some of the things that we're talking about haven't actually occurred yet. It'll be funny to talk about later, you know, and get your read on that. But one of the things like that I've noticed is with things like fundraisers. And for example, there was this fundraiser at my kid's school a couple weeks ago, and we had already sent the fund. I'm not really sure why they did it this way. It was like you sent the funds in ahead of time, and then everybody showed up to do this like walk. It was like a, you know, like a not a marathon. What's the thing called that when you
like a jogathon?
Yeah, like one of those. But everybody was going to walk the same amount, so it wasn't even really like tied to your walking and all the stuff. So we'd already sent our donation in, and it was a Friday, and you know we're all home. It's like my kids are like, but we have to go, and I was like, you know, we really don't have to go, and you know what, I don't want to go. And for like just a few minutes, I thought, oh, does that make me like a bad parent or a non-supporting school parent or something like that. And then I thought, no, I really don't need to go to this thing. It's just, it's a Friday night. It's one more thing I don't need
on my list. I loved, you wrote a piece not too long ago. I think it was just on a local blog of yours or something about, it was like an open letter to your teacher, your students. Was that something you wrote or did you just link to it? I can't remember.
Oh no, I just I linked to it, but I loved it.
Oh,
so
you
much.
Linked I to it. Like okay. I thought you wrote it. Yeah. Okay. Well, I liked it a lot.
I'll track it down and put it in the show notes. It was really good.
Okay. Well, it's basically this idea of, I mean, I don't have nearly as many kids as you, but we both work. Right. And there is a sort of weird feeling, I feel like, you know, this is all new to me since my kids are just in school, of almost needing to, I don't apologize to my kids' school for working, but almost this feeling like I need to because I just don't have the time that some of the other moms have, you know? And I'm learning a lot, just like what you were saying, that I need to let go of the idea. I want to be there. I signed up to be a reading volunteer in my kids, my daughter's classroom. And so I have plans to do what I can do, you know, but I can't do it all. I can't be there constantly. You know, one of the reasons we intentionally decided to put our kids in school instead of homeschool is because I work and because we need that time. And so it wouldn't really make much sense to send them to school and then still be there all the time. Right. Because
I get why parents there are a lot of moms who are sort of, who are very hands-on in the classroom. But what I think I've realized is that's a lot of times it's really more for the parents than it is for the teachers. Because a lot of the things that they're giving us to do really aren't things that are going to help them anyway. You know, it's almost like, here's something to do so that you can feel like you're a part of this. And I've had to really become okay with the fact that I don't really care to be part of it. And it was like, so much of this, especially because, you know, we homeschooled for a year and I do consider myself kind of like this at heart, but not in practical terms, like, you know, I would love to homeschool and, you know, control everything and create these lesson plans and all this. And wouldn't that be great? But when I put my kids in school, I really feel okay with just kind of trusting the schools to do the job that I'm, you know, allowing them to do. Yeah. And I've had to kind of grapple with that a little bit over the years and accept that part of myself that I do trust this. I mean, I wouldn't be here. We moved to this community for the schools and a big, you know, for a big reason for the schools. And I wouldn't let my kids go there all the time or all day if I didn't trust them. So I need to do that.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And so maybe I'm not going to be as present as some of the parents, but I think the teachers mostly are okay with that. I think there are some younger teachers who maybe haven't taught very long and often don't have their own kids who have a different kind of expectation.
Yeah.
But I'll just check in with them in 10 years.
That is very true.
See where they are then. Because it changes. Funny. And, you know, you think when your little kids are tiny, you think one thing. And then as they get older, it changes.
Yeah.
Right?
So. Oh, yeah. I know. We were just laughing about that this morning. Even just the things that we let our youngest get away with versus, you know, what we were like when we just had the one kid. Uh-huh. so, yeah. I mean, all those expectations. I don't know. I'm learning as a former homeschooling parent that's now doing more traditional school that it really starts and ends at home anyway.
Well, right.
You know, at the end of the day, you're the most significant teacher in your kid's life, no matter what.
Right. I'm not advocating that you just check out and don't pay any attention to what's going on and don't listen to your kids if there's something of concern and never, you know, never show up. And it's not that at all. To me, it's just more like I don't have the time to micromanage, which has led to me realizing that I never really needed to. And I think I would have thought a few years ago, I would have thought I needed to be more involved. And now I realize they're doing okay. And I don't need to be as involved. And probably the teachers, especially because we live in an area where there's a lot of parent participation. and mm-hmm. teachers have a lot of expectations. You know, this school district is really expected to perform. And I'm friends with a lot of teachers, and it's exhausting for them because they hear from parents. They deal with parents all day long. And of course, that's their job, and they recognize that. But it's like, okay, I don't need to. I'll come to you when there's a problem, like a real problem, you know? So,
sure. Yeah. Well, I think at the end of the day, our kids, as long as the home life, the family life really caters to this, they are sponges and they learn really well on their own. Like they're made to learn, I feel like, our kids. Yeah. And that's what I've experienced, kind of letting go of some of my homeschooling, you know, what I'm used to, that my kids are learning just fine. I don't want to say whether I'm involved or not, because I am involved, but you know what I'm saying, kind of what you just said.
Yeah, well, I'm involved with them. I'm involved with them, their personal lives, and I'm involved with their home lives. I mean, I'm always here, you know. I mean, I'm just like really involved with them as people, but it's okay for them to have a chunk of the day that I'm not a part of. And that was really hard for me at first to kind of accept that, especially if you have any kids who are very reticent to talk about school. I don't know if your daughter is a talker or not. Some of my kids are, and some of them don't say a thing. And it's like, you know, wild horses couldn't drag a single detail about their day out of them. And I at first that gave me a lot of anxiety, like, oh, I don't know anything. I don't know what's going on at school. And I thought, well, but I know my kid. So and I also know that I'm going to meet with her teacher in a few weeks, and I'm going to hear their side, which often gives you a whole different, perspective. Right? There we go. Yeah.
Well, yeah. My daughter, she's a talker by nature, but when I'll ask her, you know, tell me one thing you did in math today, she'll just like, fractions, and then we'll move on. And if I just let her kind of talk, it's usually about like, oh, Zach in class said this really funny thing and we all laughed, and, you know, it's like, okay, well, that's not what I meant, but okay, that's important to you. And I want to, you know, I want to hear what's important to you.
Right. So, and maybe sometimes kids are like, you know, mom, I just went through like 7 hours of school, so can I not talk about it, please?
Exactly. They're tired. Can I move on? They really are. Topic? Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yep. Well, it is. Yep. It's very interesting, especially now that I have a high schooler. The parental freak out about grades and GPA and all, I'm having, that's just another aspect of the busy, you know, the kind of that, like the blog post that you just wrote about announcing your book, and I'll link to that in the show notes as well, just how you want to have a life of intention, but not a life of busyness. And, you know, it never ends. Like, honestly, I really thought as I moved out of the age where kids were really getting into sports, and I'm like, oh my gosh, none of my kids are really that into sports. Thank goodness. Now I don't have to worry about that. Right. Well, now we're moving into high school, and suddenly my son has decided he needs to try every sport. And also, you know, his grades aren't that great. So now I'm like, do I need to have him in tutoring and do, you know, and you wrestle with it. It doesn't really go away. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, if I look back and say, what is my goal for him? How much do I care about his GPA? And that's kind of a scary thing to say out loud.
Well, I was going to ask you if it's still the case. You know, I read things, just because I'm not there yet, about just this pressure of getting into the right college equals doing all these things. I mean, do you feel that, or do you kind of,
it depends. Honestly, one thing that I've really found, it's becoming more and more important who I hang out with. Something that didn't matter to me as much when my kids were younger, I guess. Maybe it did matter in a different way. Maybe then it was easier to hang out with people who felt the same way I did about like snacks or something, you know? And then now that's become less important. But now what I find, if I get around people who are very, and you know, it's not a judgment. It's not a judgment on them, because everybody values things differently. And that's something I've also realized. Like, I value learning much more than education. And that's... Mm. That's like really hard to admit, because like all my friends are school teachers. So like almost all of them. So, and that's fine. I can hang out with them, but I just can't get too much into sort of like talking about college, because then I'll start to get anxious. And then I start feeling like I have to change the way I do things. Now, on the other hand, sometimes I do think, you know, am I pushing my son enough, and could I be expecting more of him? So I think there's a balance to be found there. Mm. But I have found that like, if I start kind of hanging around people who all have this idea exactly where their kids are going to go to school, like college, I mean, and you know, what kind of GPAs they're going to graduate with, then I start to feel like I should do that too. And maybe that's not who I am. And maybe that's not what I want for my kids, or especially particularly my oldest son, who is brilliant, but really not very academically focused. I just kind of know what I see for him in his future. I think it's going to be a fantastic, bright future, but it maybe isn't going to be other parents' version.
yeah,
of a Fantastic future. So I don't know. It's interesting. I'm still figuring it out as I go, but the pressure's definitely there. And it's a big reason we moved out. We lived in Chicago for a while, and it was actually one of the big reasons we moved away from there, because even with the, we're in a high performing school district here where we were there with that, the pressure was even worse. I mean, it was intense.
Yeah, I would imagine.
So
now, and you're, we're the same age, I think, or around the same age. And I feel sometimes like I can't believe I have kids my age. I can't even fathom. Like I, in many ways, I feel like I was just in high school.
Yeah, I do too sometimes. Oh, it's funny. Yeah. My son was in, started tennis this year. So he was in, you know, freshman tennis team or JV tennis team. And I'm at the first meeting and all the kids are like hanging out on the ground and, you know, they're all talking with each other. And then all the parents were sitting like on the picnic bench or around the picnic bench. And I got there and for a second, I literally didn't know where to go. Like for a second, I almost had to force myself to go stand with the parents because I'm looking around and I'm like, oh my gosh, am I really? And not even all of them were that much older than me. It wasn't like they were just like a bunch of senior citizens and I was, you know.
No, I know what you mean.
It didn't feel natural. We're all over there talking about snack schedules and like transportation to the games and, or the matches. And I'm just like,
I wrote a post a few months ago about that, like how sometimes I feel like as a mom, I'm still sort of playing house in a way.
Yes. Like when am I going to feel like a real grown up?
Right. And you realize when you look back on your parents and, oh, they were this age and you realize they were probably just making stuff up too.
Right.
You know, the way you make up stuff.
Yeah.
And yeah. And there are so many comments on that post of everyone saying, I feel the same way that I think in many ways we all kind of have the secret of like, we still feel like we're 16, you know?
And you know, it's funny when you look back at generations, you ever look at kids' senior pictures from like, the, you know, I'm 35. So I think we're, you 35?
Yeah,
too?
I'm 35.
Okay. So we both graduated high school in the 90s, you know, we're coming of age in that sort of decade. So if I look at high school yearbooks from like the 80s, the 70s, the 60s, I'm like, those 17-year-olds all look so old to me. Like generationally, it's almost like, you know, when I look at pictures of my mom and she was in her mid-20s, to me, she looks like a real grown-up, like a real, real grown-up, not the way I felt like I looked in my 20s. So
right.
It is funny.
Right.
It's just, you know, we associate things and generationally and hair and makeup and
all
eyeglasses
of it.
And clothes and all that stuff just looks different.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
I was in, my daughter was a flower girl in a wedding last weekend. And so I was kind of in the behind the scenes stuff when the bridesmaids were getting dressed and they were all talking. And in many ways I felt like I was just one of those bridesmaids, you know, cause there's that season when you're just constantly in other people's weddings. And, to me, it feels like I was just in that and just listening to them all talk and be giggly about the wedding night and all the stuff. And I'm just like, sort of like, oh, come on. And then I realized, wow, I feel genuinely old.
Yes.
Like that was a time when I was just like, oh my gosh, I'm so beyond that now. And that, so I'll have these little flash moments where I realize I don't want to be there anymore, but you know, I think I still am, but then I realized, no, I'm really not. I'm kind of okay in my mid 30s.
35
you know?
Is kind of the tipping point. I think I was at, a restaurant not too long ago meeting some friends and they all got there and I found myself looking around. I find myself doing this a lot now. I found myself looking around at groups of girls or groups of women and trying to figure out kind of where I fit. Like where am I in this, you know, in this age range? And I'm like, okay, so like in my 20s, I would have been one of the youngs, right? Mm-hmm. And then in my late 20s, I would have been one of the old youngs, but now I'm one of the old or the young olds.
You moved. I moved. Outside, yeah,
I'm not. You know, I'm not even old young anymore. Now I'm a young old. So,
well, and it's so relative. Yeah. You know, I mean, I actually love my 30s so much. I've had so much more fun in my 30s than I have in my 20s. And 40 doesn't remotely sound old anymore the way it used to when I was in college or something.
Right.
And so I know it's just going to keep pushing that. You know, I'm sure my parents still feel that way in some ways. Mm-hmm. You know. So
I mean, what's old anyway? I mean, like I look at my sister, she's 10 years older than me. I don't think she looks much older than me at all. And her, you know, her life now that her kids are all older. And like you said, it's not like I want to wish it away, but gosh, her life looks awesome. You know. And then my mother-in-law, I'm like, oh man, she's retired and she's like living in Florida and drumming on the beach and stuff. I'm like, that seems kind of fun too. So
that's hilarious.
Yeah.
Funny.
Well, I think we're about out of time. In fact, I think we were out of time about 7 minutes ago, but we were just having so much fun chatting.
Yeah,
it's been really fun having you here. And tell me, just before we wrap up, when does your book come out?
Oh, gosh, ages
from now. So,
yeah, it's going to be another year still, honestly.
Okay.
I think it's end of 2013, early 2014.
Like you said, it's not even done yet. So, you haven't even decided what it's going to say yet. So,
Right, exactly. My manuscript deadline's not until next February, so.
Well, I hope that as you are writing it, you're going to, like, give little hints on your blog about what, you know, what revelations you're coming to and that kind of thing along the way.
Yeah, I totally will. Good. Yep, that's the plan.
Well, everyone can check in with you at simplemom.net. And Tish, it's just been a pleasure having you on here. Thank you.
Yeah, it's been fun. Thanks, Megan. Have a good one. You too. Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to this week's episode of the Kitchen Hour podcast. To find out more about some of the resources and websites that Tish Oxenrider and I spoke about today in the episode, head over to the show notes. They're at thekitchenhour.com/episode7. That's thekitchenhour.com/episode7. See you next time.